Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we've got a lot of content to cover this year. And so I'm going to just fly through these obligatories. I think most everybody understands when I tell you that that debt is fraud, that just points to the magnitude of fraudulent government that has been created. It is, if it's not legitimate, then everything, all the money going to it is caught. It is. What's the best way to say this? I mean, when you look at illegitimacy and you're spending money on something you have no legitimate authority, then that is fraud. So when you have to put two and two together, folks, it's just when you've got government that is doing things that is illegitimate, the money that they're spending is fraudulent spending. It's that simple. I mean, do you have the authority to spend your neighbor's money? No. But if somehow you can create a way of doing it, I mean, there are ways people actually, you know, can to be really low down by just tapping into their water, tapping into their electricity, tapping into their cable. I mean, these things have happened. And so, you know, people walk around their house going, what's this power cord doing here? It's running over our neighbor's house. Come to find out that they don't have electricity, and at your magnitude of kindness, you've been powering them for the past 4 or 5 months, and you wonder why your bill is high. But anyway, that debt is fraud. It is all fraud. When we boil down what the government is spending that is legitimate spending, for years and for the past century, they have been spending us into debt. So, I mean, even the war debt, all of the wars that we fought and all the money that we spent on the war is a wash based on the taxes and the revenue. They have constantly spent money on things they've had no authority to do, well over a century. Well, it goes back into the 1800s, folks. That's how long they've been driving up the debt and spending money that they have no authority to do. And so the other obligatory is we beseech you to make a call unto heaven, make an appeal to heaven. And so, as John Locke would call it, an appeal to heaven. And so if you want to create a prayer circle, let me know. We've got one online on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. No, we haven't updated it yet. And I'm hoping to, you know, get my arms around it in the next month or so that we can be migrated off of this. I need the time, and I need a lot of help from people, which means I need you to start getting more involved. Anywho, your campaign begins today. If you haven't began your campaign yet, it needs to begin today. And so what we're talking about and what we've been talking about is United We Stand, Divided We Fall. We kind of gone through this, and we talked a little bit, and we kind of ended going through our self-interest. We're going to get back into this, but we still have this obligatory that I do on Mondays and Fridays, where we can kind of talk about Trump, and we can talk about, you know, how is his presidency going to help us out? Now, we've already covered a lot of stuff, and I don't want to go through the review of it, because if I don't have to repeat myself, then I can get through content a lot faster. Get into the content so we can cover more this year. We're planning on covering everything that you would need to have, so that we will have the archives there for you just in case. And I would recommend you download these things, especially the content, especially the documents and so forth, so that you can share and go through these things. And it'll help you understand, one, why these things are important, and two, appreciate the fact that we have these things, that we can actually reach clarity. And I, you know, when we talk in a spiritual sphere, we rely upon the language and the translations of cultures thousands of years ago, millennia. and literally. And so as the translations and the language, I mean, who today can read and actually understand the vernacular of 200-300 years ago? Most people have a hard time. I mean, there are words, and these, some of these words are either archaic, but they still, you can still find the meaning of it. And you, but we can still kind of get our arms around it. When you go 5,000-6,000 years and how the language evolves, because it is, and as a matter of fact, I knew a linguist, I worked with a linguist, that told me that we were reaching a point where our language would make a radical shift. We're already, I mean, look, we're already dealing with LMAO and, you know, these acronyms instead of actually saying words. And they're actually creating. I remember when I was growing up, using the word ain't was a mortal sin. And today there's all sorts of slang and made up words, onomatopoeia, that, you know, that have become legitimate words somehow. So anyway, when we look at the language that we're talking about of the Constitution, we have the clarity because it's still within our reach of understanding that language. Now, the fact is, nobody ever, as cultures have changed and so forth, there's nobody that ever read the definitive guide, written definitive guides of how, you know, the language is transcended from way back Moses's time, you know, and through the different cultures and through the different cultures. Nobody's ever done that. So my point is that when we look and try to understand scriptures and those types of things that go back thousands of years, you know, we really rely heavily upon the Spirit. I am here to tell you that we still need to rely upon the Spirit in reading the ratification debates and these other things, because as I've told you, and as the framers have told us, that the divine hand of providence had inspired them. So there's reasons why we need to kind of really look at the true spirit of the law that they created, which causes me to this is the segue into talking about Trump, because we need to understand the spirit of this Constitution, and we need to examine, because what we're covering today, the topic, or I should say the issue that I'm bringing forward, is that Trump needs to become the advocate of better constitutional oversight by the states. And more specifically, we want to focus today on the intelligence community and foreign relations, because he's a part of this. Now, clearly, when we look at the Constitution, we have definite roles and responsibilities given to each branch of government. In the old days, the king had all of the responsibilities and roles, and he delegated some roles to Parliament. And the other little role that was delegated out, because the king, you know, he was the omnipotent practically, he delegated a little bit of power over to the Archbishop of Canterbury. And so, because that's, you know, he wanted to protect the lineage so that only his family and people of his bloodline would be able to become monarchs, and keeping everybody else out. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, we're not going to talk about that. That's not what we're here to talk about. What we need to do is we need to examine the framework of our Republican form of government. When we look at the president, is the president established by the Constitution in a Republican form? Absolutely. Is he established by a democratic form? No, not at all. As a matter of fact, there is a democratic form done by the electors, but when the president is chosen, he is chosen by the electors. What we do today is we have a democracy, and we have been pushed into this democracy because of the parties. The parties wanted to be able to have a better control, and in a Republican form of government, it's really hard for them to control us. So they convinced us that we want to have a popular vote so the people can really say, not that we didn't have say before, It's not that we didn't have any say before. We had actually had all equal say, better control. Because there was a mechanism of how it would boil down. And so even if you had 500 people running for president, if you look at the constitutional process, you would probably have two or three major, because if you don't have one that's a clear majority, then you would have two or three major players, and then the electors would choose out of that. If they still couldn't come up with a, and actually today that isn't even done, it goes to Congress, and Congress does that. If the Electoral College can't do it, then it goes to Congress, and Congress takes the top two or three, and then they choose it down. And if by that first vote they have a clear winner, because who chooses Congress? We the people. And Congress, the House of Representatives, is equal to our electors because they're representatives. In other words, but they can't be the same. The role of an elector is really an honorary role to actually give somebody the opportunity to actually speak for and run the campaign for candidates in the local area so that they become the person of choice if that happens to be the popular candidate. Bottom line, when we look at our framework in our Republican form of government, and let's just focus on Congress. We have representation in the House. We, the people, have our representation in the House of Representatives as well as in the electors. The electors have one very minute and very specific role, the choosing of the president. Now, I'm just telling you that with the way technology has come along today, we could make some significant and real improvements to create better checks and balances in this governing system, to make it harder for the parties to control us, make it harder for corporations to control us, make it harder for tyrants and globalists to even have any influence. But we have to take back that spirit of the Constitution, of a self-governing. We, the people, have to demand our Republican form of government. And we have to stay within those lanes. And we've been so deluded and perverted into believing a democracy and mob rule is the way to go, and it's not. I could find the time, and if anybody would go through the Virginia ratification debates, you will find that they talk specifically about the dangers of population centers and democracies and mob rule. And so they created this constitution to ensure that there was a not just adequate, essential protections for the minority. Now, when they talk about minority, they don't talk minority by sex or race or anything like that. They're talking about minority politically. Minority when it comes to government, so that the population centers, the majority of a state, can't be controlled by a population center. That was the design of the Constitution, was to ensure that these small, you know, communities within the state of, you know, let's look at Chicago. It's a perfect example because it's a huge city, and then the rest outside of Chicago is, you know, kind of rural. And so we can easily see how Chicago controls the politics and affects the lives of every person in the state of Illinois. Now, you can have guns outside of Chicago because they dare not go down that path of taking away those other people's guns because they would probably want to secede. But the fact is that when you look at what the governments are doing based on these democracies from population centers, they're destroying your state and they're destroying your liberty. And the intent was that that could never happen. They created a system that actually wouldn't allow that to happen. But they didn't have teeth, and they kind of ran right over it. And then when the 14th Amendment came along to actually further galvanize these types of protections, they started redefining. The court stepped in and started redefining what these things meant. So what does Trump have to do? Trump really needs to start looking at, and being very specific, when we look at the technology, what is the whole point of the Senate? Because that's one side of our Republican form of government. Remember, our Republican form of government is not based on representation of the people. That's an old paradigm. That's an old world paradigm. And it's actually still a valid paradigm throughout the world today, except in the United States. For over 200 years, our Republican form of government has been based on not representation of the people, but representation of the sovereigns. Sovereigns being the people and the government that the people have instituted. Ergo, you have a county that the people should have instituted. They didn't because it was done for them. But nevertheless, there was representation for the county and the state. And I think one of the things that's really, you know, really stands out is why constitutions weren't done for the counties. One, because people didn't think government would be that big, that involved in our lives. It would be so consuming of our lives that they would be ruling us down the road. We didn't see this. You know, back in the 1800s, they didn't see health care. They didn't see, you know, all these services. As a matter of fact, the majority of these services are literally unconstitutional. It defies the Constitution when you tax somebody and give that taxation to somebody else. In other words, the welfare state is unconstitutional. How? Because taxation must be equal upon all members. In other words, everybody must feel the same pain. And so if you've got people that are hardly making any money, they should be still giving up the same percentage, 10%, whatever, just like tithing to the Lord. You can't take more from one, this whole concept, because this is the only way they can get away with it, is to create progressive tax. They have to create such a burden for those people who make so much money. And actually, here's the perversion of this even further. The more rich you've become, the more what they call, tax reasons just around the corner, and these are, you know, filing advantages or deductions so that you can reduce your taxable income. And so those who have more usually get and have favor so that they don't have to pay their full share that the middle class has to pay that doesn't make so much money. I mean, even Trump mocked the system. Did Trump, out of the genuine, you know, good guy that he was, did he say, you know, no, I'm paying my fair share. Don't stop me from paying. Who would do that? Who goes out of their way to say, hey, what is the top dollar for this car? I want to pay top dollar. Whatever the MSRP is, I want to pay that price. Everybody wants a better deal. So this is what society does. And this is why we created, or I should say, the divine hand of providence created a system that would make sure that nobody had advantages in America. You had the same equal opportunity to succeed as well as fail. So looking at this Republican form of government of sovereigns, when we look at Congress, there is one side that represents the people. Now, the people in interfacing should actually be interfacing 30-1 because the Constitution has been perverted in the House of Representatives. Article 1, Section 2 clearly states that Congress or a representative cannot represent more than 30,000 people. Now, we're going through the enumerated constitution. What I mean by that is a color-coded enumeration constitution where you can actually, I'm fixing this. There's a model. There's kind of an example out there already. You can download it and look at it. It's been hacked. It's not accurate. There's some parts of the Constitution that's missing by accident. But nevertheless, it's in a full rescale and reconfiguration, because what we want to do is we want to make sure that when you're looking at a particular line in the Constitution, you have no doubt what that is. That's a federal role and responsibility. That's a federal power for the executive. That is a federal power for the judiciary or Congress. So that when you're reading it, you will then understand those enumerations, because we're also going to break it down by a font color that will give you whether that part of the Constitution can be changed arbitrarily by Congress. In other words, can Congress make a law that would redefine a uniform rule of immigration? Or I should say a uniform rule of... That is where they can actually make law. In other words, the font will be of such to where you will look at that and go, oh, that is something where Congress can actually make law about that. They can make law on that. Why do I say this? Because everybody believes Congress can go pass an act and make the determination of how they're going to represent us. Like that 30,000 we just talked about. The fact is, folks, that those parts of the Constitution are immutable. They cannot even change that. It requires an amendment to the Constitution for that number to change. Which is why James Madison and the framers in the Bill of Rights presented the First Amendment to address the changing of representation in the House of Representatives. We go over this, and if you listen to us when we talked about the Constitution, we went into detail on this. The point is this, that the House of Representatives is for the people, and there's a reason for that, because the people should have the ability to interface on those few things that really should concern them, like, are we going to go to war or not? Because that's one thing Congress actually has the power to do. They can actually declare war. But they can't hand out welfare. They can't create jobs. They can't stabilize the economy. They have a responsibility of maintaining the value of our gold and silver. And that's all about production and maintaining circulation and so forth. But when it comes down to the SEC, the FCC, the Department of Transportation, labor, housing, they can't make these regulations. These are not enumerated powers. And so, understanding the framework, we have this other side of Congress that is integral and of interest to Trump. There needs to be an examination of the representative of the people's sovereigns, i.e. the people's government. And in Congress, in the federal constitution, that is the state legislature. There's no doubt about what that is. When it talks about the state suffrage in the Senate, that is the state legislature's suffrage. And when you understand the spirit of the Constitution, the intent back then was there's no way the state could dynamically provide the input. We would have a stagnant government if a senator couldn't do anything without this delegated power of attorney. As a senator, he has the power to speak for that state legislative body. Just like when you elect your representative, they're there giving you suffrage, all 30,000 of the people in their district. And so when you water that down to a million, or even a half a million, when you water that down, I'm telling you, that representative only remembers those people that write those checks that have, you know, have six zeros or greater. If we take our government back, and we actually get the representation we're supposed to have, 30,000, 40,000, maybe 50 at the most, then we actually would have representation. In other words, you should be able to call your representative. I mean, I look at the Spokane area, and that's a half a million people. And Bumgardner, who's that's his name, he just got elected to replace CMR. She bowed out. And so Bumgardner is now the representative, but he represents about almost 800,000. It's pretty close to over three quarter million, if I remember correctly. But it's more than just Spokane. It's a huge swath of Western Washington. I mean, we're talking about a huge area. And you can't tell me that every person is getting represented by Bumgardner at the House of Representatives. But when we really look at it, there shouldn't be that much that we would be concerned with what he's doing, because he has no responsibility whatsoever to be involved in, you know, handing out jobs or sending, you know, spending all of this money and creating wealth for his congressional district. That shouldn't be happening at all, folks. And so, bottom line, if we were really having true representation, they would only be representing us over those enumerations we've granted them. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so technically, I'm spending way too much time on the representation side, because that's something that Trump, you know, he needs to be aware of, how to get that back. And the best and the only way to do this is, again, he has to make these appeals to the states. But, and it's the same thing with the Senate. However, there is merit in examining the whole intent and spirit behind this representation. Now, let's just play devil's advocate, because even today, with technology, you want to have fail-safe measures. In other words, you may want to have some people in D.C. that when communications, in other words, they would be the clerk and or people that would be appointed by the state legislature who they would trust, that would make sure that if communications somehow got cut, that their suffrage would still be maintained in the Senate. But the question is this. Had the framers actually had the technology to have direct input from the state legislatures when it came to a treaty, when it came to the appointment of a judge? Now, we need to talk about the judges next. And so that's the next Trump thing. Got to make a note of that. But when we look at the Senate and its responsibility of a two-thirds of the Senate, what that should mean is it should be two-thirds of the states that actually pass. Now, here's the problem. A state could really get into a pickle if they have two separate senators that are, you know, ideologically opposing each other. In other words, you get a Democrat, because the six-year tenor, or, you know, the terms of a senator for 6 years could mean that you're, because you have this ebb and flow, constantly an ebb and flow between, you know, one election of the people, and then the people, you know, the Republicans take back the state, and then they get a Republican senator. That's how you can have a Democrat and a Republican, because it's all about politics, right? It's all about the compromised political system that the parties have taken over. In all compromising, it's all about compromise. So when we look at the state itself, is the state being served by the remnants of older decisions made by people that got rejected as of the time of the current affair, the current state of the state? In other words, let's say 4 years later, you still have a Democrat and you have a Republican, but the state house is still Republican. Then why would the state be better off with two votes instead of just the state legislature making the ultimate decision on whether they would ratify that treaty or not? Here's even the better and more important point. When we look at, because this is foreign affairs and national security, when we look at the state and what is happening in that treaty, by having what is it? By having two proxies, right? You're given power of attorney, and these people are in a position where they actually could get some benefits via another means. In other words, those players in the D.C. swamp can actually say, hey, if you vote this way, we'll contribute heavily towards your reelection, because the 17th Amendment allows that. Taking this back and repealing the 17th Amendment, actually, the rescission of the 17th Amendment is more likely. I don't think we need to repeal it. When the federal government opened the door to allowing its rescission, then, and that this should be because I look at this as the divine hand of providence. There's only been one amendment where the federal government has allowed a change on an amendment. In other words, the ratification of the amendment. And the 17th Amendment is that amendment that, because of Biden in 2010, Delaware demanded to change their rejection and ratify, and the federal government took it. Now, it's one thing if you hadn't made the determination, right? It's one thing if you rejected, you haven't rejected it or ratified, and say, you know what, we're finally going to ratify this. There are seven states that never did ratify the 17th Amendment. Seven. Which means that you only need six states to get 13 to actually change their ratification to rejection, to formally do that. When the federal government, when Congress and the administrative section of Congress allowed Delaware to make a change to its position, that opens the door for every state, because you can't have favorites. You can't say, oh, well, we'll allow you to change your position if it benefits us, but you can't change your position if it's not going to benefit us. There's no way that would stand in court. No way. At least a serious, legitimate court of justice, because the door has to swing both ways for all the parties. It just doesn't swing one way for parties that, you know, are aligned with your particular view. So the 17th Amendment could actually be rescinded. It would only require enough states, six states, to step in and say, we're formally rejecting. This doesn't happen to every amendment out there. There's never been another amendment that I'm aware of where they actually allowed the changing of a position. Okay, so to be clear, this is the divine hand of providence. He knew that the 17th Amendment really perverted the system. It made it simple for us to rescind instead of repealing. We don't have to actually go through the whole process of reamending it and creating a new amendment. The 17th Amendment would just go away and everything would just slide down one. It'd be that easy. So when we look at the intent and the spirit behind the 17th Amendment, I honestly see that the Senate should be really more of a proxy, an emergency proxy, where they can actually, because that's what they were doing in in Continental Congress. Many of the states couldn't afford to send people into the Continental Congress during the rule of the Articles of Confederation. So some of the states were actually paying other states, or, you know, given a stipend to say, hey, can your guys represent us too? I mean, that's what they were doing, because it was too much of a burden. And they didn't want to pay, and these were the states that just didn't want to fund the Continental Congress. They didn't want a national government or a general government at all. And they were struggling as a state themselves. So when we look at this, I honestly see that Trump could literally make the case that why is it that the state legislature isn't taking... Now, this is how it comes down. Article 5 of the Constitution is literally where Trump could basically take his long index finger and get right into everybody's grill and actually go right down and say, look, right here in Article 5, it says that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. And every state in this union today is being deprived of their suffrage. Not one senator is absolutely giving you your suffrage. They are making their decisions based on the globalists who have paid for their seats. And to basically prove this, he's going to say, I'm bringing forth a treaty that will benefit the states and actually not benefit. We're going to dismantle something like that, because I could easily come up with a few different ways. But Trump could easily come up and say, we're asking every state legislature to communicate to your senators, both of them, how you want them to vote, to do a preliminary vote. And we will basically negate that vote if they do not vote your way. And this will allow the, you know, this examination of saying, are you really getting your suffrage? Then every state should and has the right to basically pull back their senators based on the fact that they just violated their oath, because they said that they're going to support the Constitution. And right here in Article 5 says that they cannot deprive the state that they represent, the state legislature that they're representing. They may be elected by the people, but their job is still to represent that state legislature. And if they're not giving them their suffrage, that state legislature can call them back for violating their oath. It's that simple. I've talked about this several times, but this is where Trump can literally clean out the Senate and actually create the language for the states to actually get Congress to give them an amendment to basically shift the Senate to the state legislatures so that every treaty would need to be passed by two-thirds of the state legislatures, and every justice would need to be passed by two-thirds of the state legislatures, requiring the state legislatures then to have more of an active role in those responsibilities that were really literally doled out. There's never been a government in the world that has had the technology to actually allow that suffrage to be extended. Now, when we talk about the other side, because we talked about the House of Representatives, if we had 50,000, there's no reason why your representative needs to be in D.C. With technology today, the makeup of Congress could literally change to improve its representation of those who they represent, ensuring better suffrage in government. In other words, the suffrage doesn't go to benefit them who are voting. It benefits those who they are voting for. Now, Bumgarner, being a freshman this year in this Western Washington, and there's other freshmen that are going in, watch how much money these guys become worth, how much money they bring in. I mean, CMR was, you know, she could barely rub nickels. I mean, she did not have money when she went into Congress. She's a millionaire magnitude, multimillionaire. Folks, that is wrong. As a matter of fact, Aristotle basically said that the two reasons why the people revolt against their government is when they're starving or when they recognize that their government is making themselves rich. Those who govern them are making themselves rich off of their hard work. Folks, we don't need a revolt. We have the Constitution, and we have all the blessings in its design gives us the ability to actually improve upon this government so that we can actually have better representation. And Trump could be the champion for that. I read an article this weekend that actually was a very pointed article. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to take a minute because this came out of, let me see here. I want to say this was the South Dakota Scout. And I'm only going to read because this was an article, the column. Now, this is like a letter to the editor. Viewpoint. It's under the Viewpoint tab. And this is written by Dale Froelich, and he doesn't know I'm saying this, but this is what he said. With the latest election results, all federal power bases, the presidency, Congress, and the Supreme Court, as well as many state governors, legislatures, and courts, are majority controlled by conservative Republicans. But I view the election of Donald Trump as the worst decision that American voters have ever made, certainly in my lifetime. Now, I have a problem with that because I don't believe any of our presidents have been a good decision, period. And I still have to apply the lesser of two evils. Trump was definitely the lesser of two evils, but the biggest concern I have is his constitutional literacy. He just doesn't understand the Constitution. And so he says, certainly in my lifetime, the worst decision ever made, certainly in my lifetime, and likely in the history of our great nation, Trump is surrounded by autocrats and anarchists. With this election, many of the normal constitutional checks and balances could well be vaporized. This action is a convincing turn toward the dark ages and the possible death of the American democratic experiment. Now, I said, I don't like some of the things, but some of his tone right here in talking about the checks and balances and the spirit, the design of this Constitution is going the wrong way. And what we see is we actually see that the conservatives are trying to set themselves up to have conservative control over unconstitutional government instead of dismantling unconstitutional governments, what they should be doing. Now, I'm not sure if Dale is an advocate for that, but I am not sure what he's really saying because I only got this in this last sentence I got. As Ben Franklin famously said, more than 240 years ago, we have created a republic, a representative form of democracy, as long as we can keep it. Now, he's wrong on this. It's not a representative. Republican form of government is a representation of sovereigns in America. Most people think it's representative, which means, oh, it's representative of the people. No, it's representative of the sovereigns. Now, he doesn't break that down, but when you look at the basic understanding of a representative government, that means representative of the people. And when people look at the Senate today, well, it's representative of the people. And that's why they got away with changing out your state and basically making the Senate in the state house representative of the people instead of your county. This is how they got away with it. And so if that's the case, then why don't we just, you know, get rid of all the state boundaries and make it representative equally? Because that's exactly what the progressives want to do. And in so doing, they will literally reshape the landscape of America had they gotten there to do that. That's what they would have done. Because what's the point of having state boundaries anymore? We're all one big nation. Why have the state boundaries? Folks, this is how dangerous these concepts are that these people are hatching. So what Trump can do, and getting into the security, because I believe that he needs to create the dialogue with the state legislatures to say, why is it that the state legislature is not involved in holding their thumb or actually holding the reins of the intelligence system? Why is it that the federal government, because the federal government is just a steward of serving the union. And the national security should be an oversight to ensure that the federal government can never weaponize it to use it against the people. We've seen that the FBI, we've seen that all of the intelligence community, not all, I should say, but the entire intelligence apparatus, not the community, the apparatus has been perverted. Not that all of the people in it are, you know, even aware of what's going on and the spying and so forth, but there are enough of the leadership that has been making it happen where they've actually been successful in attacking us, in monitoring us, and basically influencing our elections and our politics and manipulating us. This should never have happened. The things we found out in the history of how the CIA and the intelligence agencies have behaved so badly, especially against the blacks in America, this should never have happened, folks. Now, I grew up in a time, and I'm an old guy, but I grew up in a time where I couldn't honestly speak of institutionalized racism. Now, I can tell you that I have actually ran into individuals that, you know, thought they knew me because, you know, based on work, it was never talked about, you know, your racial feelings or anything like that, but they didn't know me. And instantly, when they got into private, they started showing that they were racist. I go, yeah, I don't want to have anything to do with this. And so, you know, I've seen that, but I saw that in the Marine Corps, and that was not institutionalized. That was kind of closet stuff that wasn't, you know, it couldn't get out there. And I've never seen a good design, or I've never seen any evidence, I should say, of institutionalized racism in America. In the government, yes. And as a matter of fact, the government has been playing this for a long time. They've been constantly dividing us. The parties have always, as long as they can divide us, they can conquer us. Corporations have no desire to divide until they started getting benefits from the government. When they started taking sides of one way, DEI, you know, all of the different sexual issues and so forth, as companies came on board with the progressive agenda, they were being rewarded. And as a matter of fact, they got to a point where the federal government was actually going and I'll just say punishing and coming after those companies because they had that much power. By the early 2000s, they were making it hard. They were not awarding. They would not award a contract if you didn't have these very specific policies that benefited the progressive agenda, period. What? How did the federal government even get into that? Because it goes with all of these other social programs, social engineering, where they're actually manipulating. And folks, we actually have a petition on this regarding engineering. Federal engineering is unconstitutional, regardless of what it is. Education, culture, it doesn't matter. Social engineering doesn't matter. Any kind of engineering in our society is unconstitutional. They're there for very specific roles and responsibilities, and that's it. So, breaking this down, Trump can literally become the advocate in his appeal to the states to actually do some things in not even initially. I mean, he could actually get six states to undo the 17th Amendment. Right? Six states doing that, and we've undone the 17th. We've rescinded it. There's plenty of states out there complaining about it. Voila, done. The talk and the dialogue of actually changing the makeup of the Senate to actually giving them one proxy, and that proxy is basically just a clerk. In other words, they don't even vote. They just reside for a period of time, and they're given, you know, desktop procedures or what have you, so that if any reason there's a vote that comes up and the state house cannot communicate or has not communicated how they wanted to vote on that issue, then that person with proxy will be able to do that for them. And when the communications are come back online, and they find out that that person did not give them what they were expecting. I mean, in other words, the diligence in suffrage should be so heavily regarded and so deeply respected by these people that have the proxy for that state legislature. And we need to do the same thing with the House. Then all of a sudden, we're going to see our government actually serving us instead of them subjugating us. This is how we turn this. I mean, the president, having a constitutional president, I did 13 episodes. I could have probably done a whole year on this. Having a constitutional president, folks, would literally be the game changer. I pray, and I hope you pray with me, that Trump would open his heart and mind to actually pursuing those who can actually guide him constitutionally. I'm here to tell you, there's very few people. You can't get it out of Hillsdale College, Larry Arnn, or the rest of those guys. They aren't there. They don't understand the Constitution. And the same thing with these chest-pounding advocates of the Constitution. The John Birch Society, they don't understand the Constitution. They claim they do, but they understand it based on the Federalist Papers. And I'm telling you, it is so flawed. The court system, all of this is how they've been able to create these shenanigans of unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, powers, redefining stuff. I mean, it's all out of the Federalist Papers. and the Federalist Papers have no legal standing in guiding our, those who govern us. The only thing that has legal standing are the ratification debates. This is why last year we painfully went through several times when Madison schooled this Congress, the legislature in Congress, I should say, the House of Representatives, several times. And he still, even in public, would say that we have to go by based on the terms and definitions provided during the ratification of the Constitution. We go out of our way to help you understand this. So let's just pray and hope that Trump actually starts looking, because we've talked about this mechanism of controlling our national security. And that's almost an episode in itself, but we'd create a SCIF and all of that. So whenever there's any oversight, whenever a person working in the intelligence community feels like something's wrong, they should be able to go straight into the state legislature of where the state they reside, because the union's pretty big. Snowden had Hawaii. He was actually in a few different states when he worked. But point is, you go into the state legislatures, go, I've got some information, whether you actually have the data or what have you, but I have information. And when you turn it into the state legislature in a secured facility, then it is promulgated. It is immediately distributed out to every state, and every state now has to recognize and deal with the problem and step in. You do that, and now you've got actual state control over the federal government, because it's going to say, hey, hold on here. You're doing spying on the American people? That is clearly not within your power. What about the 14th Amendment, or the 4th Amendment? The people are to be secure in their persons and their effects. That means any way and anyhow, their computers, whatever they're doing, it doesn't matter. You can't be spying on that. The only way you can spy on it is through a warrant by a signed off by a judge, period. And so bottom line, folks, when we look at our intel and having this oversight, the states are the key. Our sovereigns, our representation is the key to all of this. This is how we take it back. Getting Trump, I didn't even get into the scale of liberty and close up on the on the United We Stand, Divided We Fall. We'll take that up on Friday. But I wanted to kind of close this out so I didn't span this over too. Bottom line, a constitutional presidency out of Trump would literally be the game changer, where our republic and our, the ability for the for our general government, the federal government, to actually do those things that they're supposed to do in serving the union, that can happen. It can happen. This is the time of awakening. We actually have access to the truth, and we're actually finding people realizing what the truth really is. It has been obscured for years by design. It was Hamilton's design to obscure the ratification debates and to use the Federalist Papers as the guide. We've proven this earlier this year. Anybody that tells you that the Federalist Papers are the definitive authority on the Constitution is lying to you, or they just don't understand the, I'll just say, Madison's nefarious nature of what he was doing to undermine this Constitution by over-empowering the court with powers not delegated in that Constitution. With that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and we'll be back into the Tory acts tomorrow with Tammy. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.